This is 1988 Tops, where every card has a story to tell. Your hosts are David McKellis and Matt Kuzma. Let's play ball. Welcome back to 1988 Tops. David, what's our card for this week?
Our card this week is card number 294, Al Pedrique, shortstop for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
All right, Al Pedrique, and why are we talking about Al today?
I don't remember exactly what we promised, but I think on some episode we joked about a Christmas special, and then we said, we'll probably do like Al Pedrique or something. And we said it. I know that we promised an Al Pedrique episode, and so here you go. Al had the shortest major league career of any of the all-star rookies in the 1988 top set. We've previously discussed Matt Noakes, Gator Greenwell, Casey Candel, Mike Dunn. But Al, while he had a short MLB career, is still working in pro baseball 45 years after he was initially signed and played an important role in the career of a recent MVP. And he was also inexplicably in RBI baseball on the National League All-Star team. We have no Sabre bio this week, but research assistant Curtis and also the @1992 Pirates Twitter account came through with some solid resources for us to consider. And so thank you very much to those guys for their help.
Sounds like a very resourceful show that we've put together. So let's go to the front of card 294. And we have the resourceful Al Pedrique in a ready position, ready for the ball to be hit to him at shortstop, although he looks a little uncomfortable here. His crouch is okay, but he's kind of grimacing a little bit. The stirrups are kind of prominent in this shot. It looks good, the gray pirate uniform and the black shirt. It doesn't look all that comfortable, and also doesn't look very young for an all-star rookie.
At this point, he was already 26 years old. He had played 800-plus games in the minor leagues at this point. The way that the picture is framed, he looks kind of like a hulking giant, like he doesn't fit in the frame. And he's got his arms hanging there. Looks almost like a troll.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like if he stood up, he'd be Ed Hearn size.
And he'd bump his head on the frame of the picture.
David, the little gold cup we've talked about with the All-Star rookie cards looks really good. And noticing that it's, I think, the same color as the Pirates label and border of the card. So I feel like that gives it a nice extra bit of pizzazz. The red and gold playing very nicely, I think.
This was the second year in a row in the 80s that the Gold Cup was actually included on the card. In previous years, between the late 70s and 1987, Topps named an All-Star rookie team but didn't put the Gold Cup on the card. The Gold Cup came back in 1987. On those 87 cards, you had the thin nameplate at the bottom, and the Gold Cup kind of popped up a little bit into the picture. Back in the 70s, the cup was just floating around. And sometimes it was a trophy with a little baseball guy on top. This one, it fits perfectly with the way that the card is laid out in that little triangle of a nameplate on the bottom. They just filled in the rest of the corner of the card. I think it's a perfect spot for the little gold cup and looks really nice on this card.
Let's go to the back of 294, and we have Al Pedrique, shortstop, height 6'2", 155, right-handed batter and thrower. Signed by the Mets as a free agent in 1978. Born August 11th, 1960 in Aragua, Venezuela, with a home in Carabobo, Venezuela.
I found a few different birthplaces listed for Alfredo Jose Pedrique. On the card, it does say Aragua, which is the name of a state in Venezuela. On Baseball Reference, it says Valencia, which is a city, not in the state of Aragua. Valencia is actually the state capital of Carabobo, where it says Al lived in 1988. Found another article that said Guacara, which is another city right next to Valencia. But let's go with Valencia, because we trust our friends over at Baseball Reference. And that is the largest of those listed cities. It is the third largest city in Venezuela, with over 2.5 million people. Other Major League Baseball players from Valencia include Giants shortstop Wilmer Flores, Kansas City Royals catcher Salvador Perez, Nationals catcher Keibert Ruiz, 80s infielder Alvaro Espinoza, and King Felix, Mariners legend Felix Hernandez. Al's dad, Alfredo, was an airplane mechanic for the Venezuelan army, and he also played in softball tournaments. Tagging along with his dad to those games gave little Alfredo a love of baseball, and he would carry that through his life. And at age 17, he was signed by the Mets for $10,000. Well, he got $10,000. $5,000 was from the Mets, and $5,000 was from a Venezuelan pro league team. And with that money, he was sent to live in Little Falls, New York, playing for the low A Little Falls Mets.
He was 17 years old and homesick. Didn't play well that first year, hitting .222 in 20 games. He wanted to quit, but his manager at Little Falls, Chris Krug, helped him out during this time. Krug had played 11 seasons of professional ball, 3 seasons in the majors for the Cubs and Padres. Krug knew what it was like to toil in the minors, and he talked Al into sticking around and giving it another shot. Al split 1979 between Little Falls and Lynchburg, which was high A, playing mostly shortstop. But he was not really a regular starter on either team, playing 31 games at Little Falls and then 19 games at Lynchburg, backing up Ron Gardenhire. In 1980, he was finally a regular contributor, playing 105 games at Lynchburg, hitting .246, no homers, a slugging percentage of .268, pretty low. He played second base, shortstop, third base, more than 20 games at each. So he was becoming a utility infielder.
It took him 3 seasons just to make it to Double A, and then he would spend the next 4 seasons at Double A Jackson. Still only 20 years old, has no power, hits .240, low average, no power guy, pretty good with the glove. He had no home runs for his first 4 seasons in the minor leagues. The next year, he hit .219 for a team that included Daryl Strawberry. He's on these really good Mets farm teams that always have a guy who's going to end up on the 86 Mets, it seems. He hit 2 home runs that year, so big power surge for Al Pedrique. Still slugging only .278. He had 9 stolen bases. In the offseason, he decided to take some English classes at the University of Houston in an effort to better communicate with his teammates and coaches, and that would serve him well throughout his baseball life. 1983, he improved his plate discipline, so for the first time we see a on-base percentage over .300, .318, still no power. 1984, he seems to have figured it out, met the level. He was just too good to stay there at this point. .285 with a .360 on-base percentage. He hit a home run and 5 triples. But this, as I said, was a stacked farm system. On that team, he played with Lenny Dykstra, Ed Hearn, Mark Carrion, Rick Aguilera, Randy Myers, Randy Milligan, Roger McDowell, Floyd Yeomans, Calvin Schiraldi, all guys who would go on to play in the major leagues. This Double-A team won 83 games, winning the Texas League title.
We're up to 1985 now. We're still in the minors, and all of these lines are on the back of the 88 Topps card. We still have a ways to go, but we're now up to the big year for Al, where he finally makes it to AAA Tidewater. He had a .250 year. The Tidewater Tides won the International League, and they wouldn't win the International League again until 2023, when their shortstop was, I don't know, maybe, I guess you could call him the next Al Pedrique, 2022 number one overall pick, Jackson Holliday. In 1986, Al took another step, hitting .293, his highest average in the minors. But he was not called up to the Mets because he was leapfrogged by another person from that amazing farm system, Double-A player Kevin Elster, jumped over Al completely and played 19 games for the Mets in 1986. Al saw this and knew where he stood with the Mets at this point.
He said he went to spring training and Davey Johnson never even talked to him. But he must have played well enough that in 1987, coming out of spring training, he got his chance in the majors. Just barely. He was with the Mets for a month and he got 1 start in 5 games. He went 0-for-6 with a walk, scored a run, and then was sent back to AAA Tidewater, where he was on the bench behind Kevin Elster. A lot more is expected out of Kevin Elster than out of Al Pedrique. They know what they're going to get from Al Pedrique. Elster was a higher prospect. He hit .310 on the year and was clearly the shortstop of the future for the Mets. At this time, the Mets were looking for a major league veteran, somebody they could slot into their infield, and they were looking at Bill Allman of the Allman Brothers, I believe. And Bill was the number one overall pick in the 1974 draft, the Jackson Holiday of his day. And Pirates GM Sid Thrift was interested in Al Padrique in exchange, and he went to visit Tidewater to see him play. But Padrique was often on the bench, so he actually asked the manager, this is a very strange thing, that the GM of another team asks a AAA manager to play one of the players so that he can watch him. Some real competitive integrity happening at the AAA level. So Thrift asks Mike Cubbage to see Al at short or third base, and Cubbage puts him in the game. Thrift said that Al had good hands and an accurate arm. He could play third base, which was important for the Pirates as they didn't have a backup at that point. And so we don't have a this way to the clubhouse because they really had to put all of those years of AA stats on the card. But on May 29th, Al was traded with Scott Little to the Pirates for Bill Allman.
Allman would play 49 games for the Mets, go to the Phillies the next year, and be done after 1988. So not really a big prize. Scott Little was a AA outfielder. He made it to the Pirates for three games and went 1-for-4 in 1989. And eventually became a manager, managing extensively in the farm systems for the Pirates, Dodgers, Nationals, and Rangers, and was a scout for the Dodgers. But Al Padrique, really the star of this trade, he was supposed to be a backup for the Pirates, but starting shortstop Rafael Belliard struggled at the plate, and 26-year-old Al Padrique got some chances. He got his first major league hit in a June 4th game against Atlanta, a single off Zane Smith. He got 10 starts in June, hitting .250, 13 starts in July, hitting .277, and hit a big league home run off San Francisco's Mike Lacoste on July 20th. Let's go to Al Michaels and Howard Cosell on the call on this home run. Wait, I'm hearing that there's no YouTube of this home run. Sorry.
By August of that year, he was the starting shortstop for the Pirates, starting 28 games that month, and he took advantage of that playing time, hitting .385 with an unheard of for Al Padrique, .430 on base percentage. He had a walk-off hit on August 26th, the only walk-off hit of his career. Against John Franco of the Reds, Al came up with two outs, tied 5-5 in the bottom of the ninth, and Johnny Ray on second base. And thank you to 1992 Pirates on Twitter. We do have a video of this rare occasion.
Franco's pitch. And a scrubber off to the right side. It's in for base hit. Johnny Ray scores. The Buccos defeat the Cincinnati Reds.
Al would say, I'll take it. It was a blooper. I don't care. It's a game-winning RBI. Al was hitting over .300. He was playing solid defense. His teammates called him ESPN because of his highlight reel plays at shortstop. And then his bat cooled off a little bit in September, dropping his average with the Pirates to .301. Combining that with his 0-for-6 Mets performance, he hit .294 on the year, 10 doubles, a triple, a home run, 5 steals, and 87 OPS plus.
Okay, so for the year he had an 87 OPS plus, 10 doubles, 1 triple, 1 steal. How on earth did he become the all-star rookie for Topps in 1987?
It is out of place considering the rookie seasons that Kevin Seitzer, Mark McGwire, Matt Noakes, Mike Greenwell, Ellis Burks, all these guys had really good seasons. And then you have this guy who played in 90 games. And the problem was no one else was good. Topps was committed to having somebody at every position, but Al's 1.4 wins above replacement was actually the best among rookies who played at least half of their games at shortstop. Second was the great Bill Pakoda with 1 win above replacement. He played in 66 games, only 36 of them at shortstop. Third was Walt Weiss, and Walt Weiss had a .6 war. He played in 16 games total. There just wasn't really a rookie shortstop who was worth it. The only other name on this list that jumps out is Matt Williams, later a much better third baseman. He played 84 games at shortstop and hit .188. Paul Nocci, he played 70 games and hit .228. You're not going to give the little cup to those guys. Al Padrique hit over .300 at least. He wasn't great, but they had to pick somebody at every position. So that .300 average, solid defense for the Pirates, you get a little gold cup.
Well, along with that gold cup on the front of the card, Al Padrique was also named to the National League All-Star team in RBI baseball. And for that, we go back to the RBI corner with Brian. And we are back in the RBI corner. Brian, three shows in a row. We are so glad to have you back to talk about Al Padrique on the National League All-Star team.
Yeah, wonderful to be back. And we will get to Al in a minute and how it was that he was on the National League All-Star team. But first, a little bit about the National League All-Star team. RBI Baseball has 10 teams, we've discussed before. 8 regular teams, which are the playoff teams from the 86 and 87 seasons, and then 2 all-star teams. And it seems like the all-star teams were taken from the 1987 season when you look at the personnel and you look at the stats. As you can imagine, those are two very strong teams, and I actually believe the NL team is the better of the two. For the record, the National League did beat the American League in the 1987 All-Star game, so maybe it's fitting that they are better. Although that was a 2-0 victory in a 13-inning game that was scoreless for the first 12 innings. So that doesn't quite square away with the power hitting that you see from the two All-Star teams in RBI Baseball. So in the game, the National League All-Stars have tremendous power up and down the lineup after you make a few substitutions, although the lineup is very right-handed. Andre Dawson is one of the game's best hitters, and players like Tim Raines and Mike Schmidt and Eric Davis and Dale Murphy, just saying their names gives you a sense of the strength of the team. What separates the NL All-Star team from a team like Boston or the AL All-Stars, for me, is the pitching. Fernando Valenzuela is one of the game's best pitchers, and he's a lefty who can serve as an antidote against a team like Detroit that has a lot of great left-handed hitting. He has tremendous movement, and as we've discussed before, movement is more important for pitchers in RBI baseball than speed, so Valenzuela may be the game's best pitcher. Now, it's kind of cheap to use an all-star team, but I would think of it like a golf handicap. So maybe if you're an inexperienced player, you're not as skilled, you use the all-star team and you match up against a more experienced player who's using a team like Houston or St. Louis. But even then, if you know what you're doing, you should be able to win with the worst teams, even if you're playing against an all-star team.
That sounds great, Brian, but we're here to talk about Al Padrique, and we're wondering if you can shed light on why exactly Al Padrique is in this game?
It's a terrific question. Why is Al Padrique A, in this game, B, in this game as an all-star in the National League, and then C, a starter on the National League All-Stars in RBI Baseball? It's very bizarre. So let's start here. There are no player duplicates in RBI Baseball. So if you have a player on the regular team in the game, one of the 8 regular teams, they don't show up in the All-Star team. So here's what this means for the National League All-Stars. From the 87 starting lineup of the National League All-Stars, you have no Jack Clark, no Daryl Strawberry, no Gary Carter, and no Ozzie Smith, as they're already in the game on regular teams. And then some of the All-Star game bench players aren't available either, as they're on some of the other teams. So what the game's developers apparently did was they tried to find the next best player across the 87 season to fill some of those holes. So you don't have Ozzie Smith, you have to get a shortstop from somewhere. And the starting lineups do contain some position integrity. Now, the game itself is actually positionless insofar as you can swap in any player at any position. None of the players have defensive attributes that are unique to those players. But when you go back to the guide that was included with the actual cartridge itself when you bought RBI Baseball, they did have position assignments to players. And they did have a shortstop for the NL All-Star team. And that shortstop was Al Padrique. So he played shortstop in the National League in 1987, so he qualifies on that basis, I suppose. And apparently the game used him to slot in for what would have been Ozzie Smith's slot, since Ozzie Smith is on the Cardinals. What's completely unclear is why the game didn't use Hubie Brooks. He actually made the National League All-Star team in 1987, and he played his entire season only at shortstop. So why Al and why not Hubie? If I had to guess, Al had a higher batting average, and maybe the game just wanted to have some weak links on the stronger teams, and the National League All-Star team is as strong as it comes. But until the oral history of RBI Baseball is written, we'll just never know exactly why they chose Al Padrique.
In defense of the selection of Al Padrique, I guess if there is a defense, maybe they were just ahead of their times and looking at the advanced statistics. If you look at the wins above replacement among National League shortstops in 1987, Al Padrique is third behind Ozzie Smith and Jose Uribe, both of whom are in the game on the Cardinals and the Giants. He was actually ahead of a young Barry Larkin, who was just at the beginning of his career, had not yet made an all-star team. And if you look at the list of other shortstops in the National League, there's nobody on there who's a must-have. You got a Tom Foley, not Dave Foley, different guy, Gary Templeton, Hubie Brooks, who you mentioned, who made the All-Star team, but his final stats on the season were not very good, and he would have been a third expo on the RBI baseball team after Andrés Galarraga and Tim Raines. So I guess you go with the young guy, the rookie, 26-year-old Al Pedrique.
Well, whatever the reason, and I appreciate that brain candy, David, as a quick tribute to Dave Foley, Al Pedrique is, in fact...
I've been taking my stummies all day.
Al Pedrique is an RBI baseball all-star, and that's arguably more prestigious, and it's inarguably more exclusive than making the real National League all-star team. So shout out to Al Pedrique, because this is perhaps his most incredible career accomplishment. As I mentioned previously, not only on the team, he's a starter on the team. He's actually the number 8 hitter on the National League All-Stars. You know, we talked about in the Tom Brookins episode how sometimes the on-screen stats don't match with the player attributes. Well, this is a case where they absolutely do. Al Pedrique has one home run. He had one home run in the 87 season. He has one home run in his stats on screen in RBI baseball. And he definitely hits like a player who has one home run. He has the third worst power in the game behind only Rafael Santana and Wally Backman. He isn't slow, but he also isn't fast where his speed is an asset. So it doesn't really matter that he isn't that slow. Overall, the Dini website that we've shouted out before, they consider him to be the 5th worst position player in all of RBI baseball, according to their scoring algorithm. So that gives you some sense of where Al Pedrique lands along the continuum of RBI baseball players.
So the key question, though, Brian, do you keep him in the lineup?
Oh, God, no. You have to get him out of there. This is one of the best teams, maybe the best team in RBI baseball, and Al Pedrique is really bad, so you absolutely sub him out. Any one of the bench players, and these are the names of the bench players on the National League All-Stars. You have Tony Gwynn, John Kruk, Pedro Guerrero, and Dale Murphy. Any one of those players, unsurprisingly, are better than Al Pedrique. So you want to sub them in. By the time you get to the number 8 spot, you've probably already made a few substitutions. So you're most likely looking at subbing him in either Tony Gwynn or John Kruk. Either one of those players would be fine. Gwynn brings some speed. Kruk brings a little more power. But both of them are left-handed and give you another lefty in the National League All-Stars lineup.
Well, that's great. Brian, you said the oral history should be written. I'm thinking a feature-length documentary about the history of RBI baseball and the decision of Al Pedrique. I think you're just the man for the job.
I would be 100% in favor of that, and I'm looking forward to it. And I can't wait to see both of you appear on our RBI baseball documentary.
Thanks a lot, Brian.
Thank you, guys.
In 1988, Al Pedrique, coming off that RBI baseball all-star season, wasn't even guaranteed the starting spot at short. Al had to beat out Félix Fermín and Rafael Belliard for the spot, which he did, but his sophomore slump was pretty rough. In April, he went 5-43, had a terrible OPS of only 371. The Pirates were 16-6 that first month, but he was stinking it up at the plate. He did have an interesting on-field encounter on April 13th, though. Thanks again to the 1992 Pirates site for finding this. A spectator came onto the field. It's a very nice-looking lady in a jean jacket and a fancy Pirates-colored top. Nice hair, black pants, comes out to shake Al Pedrique's hand. Doesn't give him a kiss on the cheek. We're kind of thinking of Morgana the Kissing Bandit. But instead, it's just someone giving Al a nice smile and maybe, you know, wanting to exchange digits after the game.
She walked out to him at shortstop and said, "I think you're a good-looking guy. I'd like to shake your hand." And she shook his hand and then walked away.
That's so chaste. There's no kissing bandit. There's nothing. I mean, it's just a meet cute.
This was not an assault. This was an introduction. Pitcher Brian Fisher, who was on the mound, said he was disappointed that she didn't try to give Al a kiss. Al wasn't married at the time. Fisher was, and he said that he was glad that she didn't come to the mound because it said his wife would not have tolerated that. Andy Van Slyke was a little bit jealous, and he questioned why it was Al and why didn't she come out to say hi to him. He said it was because Al was clean-shaven, and that's why she chose Al over him. Meanwhile, Spanky admitted Al's better looking than he was, but he was relieved because his wife and mother-in-law were in the stands. And he didn't want to have to answer any questions about who's this lady, this random Pittsburgh lady wandering out to Spanky behind the plate.
Women in Pittsburgh are assertive. There's no doubt about that. And they love their sports stars. So I think that he really must have made an impression. a little later in the season, Al was the special guest for a Spanish lesson at the Shadyside Academy Junior School in the east end of the city. The kids asked the tough questions like, who is that lady? And do you prefer Pittsburgh or your homeland? This was all part of a global awareness series, and we're not sure how Al answered those questions, but at the end of the session, the pirate parrot came out and danced around, gave out prizes, and dumped water on Al's head. That just seems kind of rude.
I don't know if it was Al's head or his own head.
Oh, on his own head. I would hope is his own.
Yeah, I don't want him, again.
That seems like a...
I don't want him to assault Al Patrique. But it does seem like a questionable decision to dump water on the head of a mascot costume. You're going to reuse that thing. It's going to get moldy.
And then once again, Al's got to compete for his spot, just like in spring training. The kids had a tough time deciding whether they preferred the parrot or Al. To be honest, David, I'm gonna pick the parrot.
Al Patrique was hitting 200. I don't know what the pirate parrot was hitting at this time, but it was probably better than Al's 200.
Al had an unfortunate day, May 8th of that season. Doug Drabek took a no-hitter into the ninth inning, only to have Randy Reddy hit a ball just past second base. Al made the play, but could not get Reddy out, and that broke up the no-hitter. Disappointing day. And the next day, Al was sent down to AAA Buffalo. He wanted to get back to the big leagues. He said, I've never given up before, and I won't now. And it worked. Only a couple weeks later, he was back in the majors, but then sadly was demoted again in early June. So an up and down season for him, hitting well at AAA, 307, but overall 180 average for the year in 1988, playing in 50 games. He was released at the end of the season and signed in December with the Detroit Tigers.
He started 1989 with the Tigers, played in 31 of Detroit's first 70 games. He hit 203, took only two walks in 71 plate appearances, and he was sent down to Toledo, and he hit 207 at Toledo. So even at AAA, some years he would hit 300, some years he'd hit 200. It wasn't clear that he had the bat to be too good for AAA. And after that season, he played for a few more AAA teams. He just didn't want to give up. First, he signed with Oakland and spent some time at Tacoma. He was back in Tidewater with the Mets, where he spent 85 to 87. He played fine for the Mets in 79 games. But then the next year, he signed with the Royals and was sent to Omaha. And in 1993, at 32 years old, he signed for Florida. And this season, he hit really well, and it looked like he should get called up. 305 at Edmonton with a 380 on base, but he never got the call. 1994, the strike season, he dropped off, hit 233, decided to call it a career when the strike hit.
So closing the book on Al Patrique, 17 seasons in the minor and major leagues, parts of three seasons in the majors. He played 174 games in the majors for the Mets, Pirates, and Tigers with a batting average of .247, one home run, one triple, 18 doubles, 36 RBIs, and an OPS plus of 65. In the minors, 1,436 games with 812 of them in 10 different seasons at AAA. At all levels of the minors combined, he hit .256 with more than 1,000 hits, 9 home runs, and 400 RBIs. How about in retirement?
Right after Al retired in 1995, the Royals front office called him to see if he would manage their short season A-ball team in Spokane. And Al initially didn't want to say yes to this. He didn't feel like he was ready. He thought maybe he should be a position coach first. But they talked him into it. His first hitting coach there gave him great advice. This was Jose Tartable, Danny Tartable's dad. And he told Al, you cannot make decisions with your heart. We become parents, best friends. You have to learn how to separate that relationship when it comes to making tough decisions, whether to send a kid down, release a kid, or give them the great news that they're moving up. And Al took that advice to heart, and since 1995, he's been coaching at all different levels as a manager, coach, all through different farm systems and up to the pro level. He's been in the Royals, D-backs, Yankees, Athletics, Marlins, and now the Phillies system. In 1998, he coached a few of the guys that we've talked about, including Joe Slusarski, Pete Incaviglia, and Casey Candel, when they all played for the New Orleans Zephyrs. Along with many minor league managerial positions, Al was the D-backs third base coach in in 2004, and when Bob Brenly was fired, Al became interim manager. It didn't go great because this team was terrible, and they had a 22-61 record under Pedrique. Ooh. And he did something that was described by Tom Verducci as, quote, professional cowardice. In September of 2004, the Diamondbacks faced the Giants and Al's old teammate, Barry Bonds. Bonds came into the series with 698 home runs, and Al was quoted in multiple publications saying he didn't want number 700 to be at Bank One Ballpark. Over the next three games, they avoided pitching to Bonds. In 14 plate appearances, he walked six times, twice intentionally. They didn't give him much to hit. Bonds got three hits, and one of them was a home run. So he got to 699, but not to 700. Media reaction was negative. Along with being called a coward, Al was said to be making a mockery of the game. Bud Selig was told to intervene about the intentional walks and pitching around Bonds. He said Pedrique's comments, quote, deserve further scrutiny. And Al later said it was all a big misunderstanding. He was trying to make a joke while actually using the real strategy that everybody was using against Barry Bonds in 2004. What he meant was, if we have a chance to win the game, we're going to walk him and not let him beat us with a home run. Bonds walked 232 times in 2004, so everybody was using that strategy. Al just tried to make a joke and said something about it publicly. But he also said he doesn't regret that decision.
Al was removed as interim manager at the end of 2004 and never again managed in the big leagues. He did serve as a special assistant for the Astros from 2007 to 2009, then as a bench coach for the Astros, then went back to the minors for a bit in the Yankees system. He won the AAA championship with Scranton Wilkes-Barre in 2016. Spent some time as the A's first base coach, then third base coach from 2018 to 2020. Then in the Marlins system, first as a AAA manager for the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. Then as Don Mattingly's third base coach in 2022. And most recently, he managed the Reading Fightin' Phils, the Phillies' AA team. On August 13th, Al earned his 1,000th win as a baseball manager, 978 in the minors, and then those 22 in the majors for the Diamondbacks. So, David, we started the episode with a very old-looking rookie on the front of a card. And now we've got a guy who's won almost as many games as a manager as he had hits as a baseball player. So what do we think?
From Al's initial signing as a scared 17-year-old to now, he's been in pro baseball for 45 years. The landscape of baseball has changed so much. From Al's first game in the majors, when he was the 42nd player from Venezuela to play in Major League Baseball, now 473 Venezuelan players have made it all the way to the big leagues. And it took Al a long time to get there, but he was persistent and kept at it and made the big leagues for a limited period of time. But one of the players who Al helped along the way in his coaching, one who Al scouted when he was Astros director of Latin American operations, might be Al Pedrique's greatest contribution to baseball. Al's in Venezuela working for the Astros, and according to his scouting report, Al saw, quote, a batter with the ability to get to the major leagues in 5 years, faster than Al's 10, capable of a 270 to 290 average, line drive hitter without much power, must work on his defense. Al trusted his instincts, recommends that the Astros sign the player, and he operated under a principle that was taught to him by legendary scout Andres Renner, who was a visionary Venezuelan scout and who had signed Johan Santana, Freddie Garcia, Bobby Abreu, and Renner said, never exclude anyone at first glance. And so Al maybe fudged some numbers and handed the Astros a report that marked the player as 5'7". The Astros GM said, is this the same guy you were telling me about who was 5'4 2 weeks ago? But Pedrique had a reputation in baseball, and the Astros trusted him, and he staked his reputation on this runt, as Al called him, and said, no matter what, we gotta sign him. And the Astros offered the young man $15,000, slightly more than they gave Al Pedrique in 1978, because they believed in Pedrique. Player's father says, reject it. But this 17-year-old, without a negotiation, says, Dad, don't ruin it. I just want to play baseball. And so that summer, in the Venezuelan Summer League, Jose Altuve hit .343 with 12 doubles, 4 triples, 15 stolen bases. Within 4 years, he's in the major leagues. A few years after that, he wins an MVP. He wins a World Series. And Al Pedrique is given a lot of credit for that. So from a 17-year-old who almost quit to a guy who spent a decade in the minors before he got his chance, and now almost 30 years in coaching, Al has seen it all. 45 years, and he's helped develop and produce some of the biggest names in baseball. The 1,000 wins or the All-Star Rookie recognition are not Al Pedrique's greatest accomplishment. He said, "I'm most proud when I see a player that makes it to the major leagues." And Al's been successful in that. He's managed Aaron Judge, Luis Severino, Gleyber Torres, Brandon Webb. And he said, "Once you see the players who get to the majors and be successful as a coach, that is a present." So on this Christmas episode, Al Pedrique's greatest present is seeing his young players succeed. Jose Altuve has said of Al, "He was the one who believed in me. I feel like I need to thank him every single day for what he did." But Pedrique, as a good coach does, said, "Altuve deserves all the credit. I kept telling people, just give him a chance. He loves to play the game." And so Al and his wife, who I don't think was the lady who shook his hand on the field in Pittsburgh, were at home watching the game as Altuve fielded the final out of the World Series. And he said, "I got goosebumps. He's our guy. We're very proud of him." We've joked around about Al Pedrique, the All-Star rookie, but he's a baseball guy and a great one at that.
It came full circle. Al Pedrique signed 17, thinking of quitting. His first coach in the minors helps convince him to stay and shows him some support. And it turns into not an All-Star or Hall of Fame career on the field, but such an important career as a manager and scout and supporter. And then coming around and passing that on is a great thing to see. So it's a great story. Thank you, David, for the story today. And thank you to you at home. If, like Mr. Allman, you were born a rambling man and trying to make a living just doing the best you can, we'd love to hear all about it. Just reach out to us on our socials. We're at 1988 Tops Podcast. Thanks a lot. We'll see you next week.